This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Chelsea Fancast, fueled by Guinness, powered by Celery, the show that, unlike the Ricketts family, will carry on even in the face of adversity. Now, I know what you're thinking, Chid, you sound a lot younger, you sound more handsome as well. But the truth is, I am not Stanford Chid. I am, in fact, Dean Mears, host of Wentmo Kingsmeadow, the Fancast podcast on the Chelsea women's team, stepping in to Chidge's shoes tonight. But fear not, we do have the right-hand man, the Steve Clark to the show. That's Jonathan Kidd. Jonathan, how you doing?
Oh, great, thanks. Great, thanks, Dean. I was never a great fan of Steve Clark. Can we find someone else?
Steve Holland?
More of a coach. Okay, I read about what Steve Clark did to Anelka when he was manager, and I didn't go a bundle on that. So just a little piece of knowledge. Do you wish me to introduce the two youngsters, the two even more youngsters that we have on the show? We have of course your partner in crime from Wentmo Kingsmeadow, and this is a subtle attempt to take the show over completely. I know, I understand what's happening. It's the excellent Dane Whittle.
I got confused then, because he usually introduces me first. And then when he went, so I was gearing myself up to say something. Obviously, so used to doing Wentmo Kingsmeadow with Dean, and confused already. But I'd like you to elaborate on that Anelka story.
He didn't pick him when he managed West Brom for a variety of reasons. It was in Anelka's documentary. There was a good documentary on Anelka. Anelka was slightly distraught. Anelka was a wonderful, wonderful player, and was with a very headstrong personality and very complex guy. And he didn't pick him, and they fell out in some way. And it was a very it didn't come across. Steve Clark didn't come across very well in the documentary as a consequence. Mm. I mean, also he was in and out of the Chelsea side. I just think there are other players I could be. Chidge's mate with, Chidge's paired with, you know, like
Johnson to his Hasselbank.
The
good Johnson to his Hasselbank.
Hey, absolutely. Yeah, thank you. The Duff and the Duff to his Robin. I should know that. The trouble with that is that makes him as equals. You almost need to have somebody, the Matter to his Drogba. How about that? That would be quite good, because there's more diminutive about it. By the way, the person speaking then was the fabulous Liam Toomey, who has been entertaining us royally with his athletic articles and his tweets, which have been terrific as usual. Liam, congrats. So
I didn't mean to jump in ahead of my introduction.
No, you're allowed. You're allowed, because it gives me an opportunity to introduce it. I like the stuff you were talking about, the Madrid game. I thought it was really, really on the ball. So fantastic, good stuff. Of course, this is the great Liam Toomey, and it's a joy to have him on the show. So
Thanks, guys. Pleasure to be back.
That's it.
Yeah, well, the thinking behind Steve Clark, JK, was the assistant to the interim host as I am tonight.
Yeah, no, no. And I go, oh, God, it's far more complex than I thought. Bloody hell, you're way ahead of me. Oh, God, sorry. Sorry. I've overcomplicated it. Oh, God, shit. Sorry about that. but thank you. Anyway, thank you very much, regardless.
Yeah, now we have got Liam for just a short while, so I think it would be remiss of us not to talk about the latest.
Yeah, just plug him in.
In terms
plug
of
him in. Let's do it, Liam.
The ownership of the club with the Ricketts family pulling out today, Liam. What's been going on with that? I know you're not sort of on duty as such, but still got your fingers in the pies.
Yeah, so I must caveat this by saying that I was walking my dog in a park with no phone signal when this news originally broke, as it was my day off today. It was
fine
a big
picture
surprise.
Of the dog, though, Liam. Fine picture of the dog. I like.
Yeah, she's Ruby's gorgeous. It was a big surprise, I think, to everyone, given that the Ricketts were considered, you know, front runners, I think, along with Todd Bowley, in spite of, you know, the sort of fan mobilisation against them. The perception, certainly within the principal parties of the process, like Rain and Chelsea, was that they were a very strong bid with a lot of money behind them and a lot of kind of sports franchise pedigree as well. And they only recently added Dan Gilbert, of course, as well. But now that we know what we know, you know, that I think the story that broke, I can't remember how long ago it was, that, you know, when they were saying they wouldn't actually be the majority shareholders in their bid, that rang a few alarm bells in terms of something being a little bit off with the organisation of this. And it very much seems like the reason why they've not submitted a final bid now is that the individual investors couldn't agree about how they were going to divvy it up, essentially. And that who was going to be the majority shareholder and who would do what. And it's a big shock that they haven't submitted a final bid after they were shortlisted in this process. And I'm sure the other three bid teams will be pretty happy about that, because there was certainly at one point a perception from some people around the process that Rain and Chelsea, particularly Rain, were sort of inclined towards the Ricketts bid and the suggestion that maybe Bruce Buck on the Chelsea side was advocating for them. So the fact that they're now out of the equation, I think if you're Todd Bowley and his consortium, you've got to be feeling pretty good about yourselves, because they've kind of put themselves at the front and centre of this. I've been talking to people with knowledge of the Paliuka bid, which has been very, very quiet so far, but they're quietly confident that they've timed this well and that they've conducted themselves in the right way, that they've not gone shouting from the rooftops. They've focused on the substance of their bid financially and the plan for what they do with the club, and that now they're starting to, you know, be a little bit more public and transparent and engaging with fan groups as well. So that I think there's a sense from them that they've kind of timed their run nicely. The Martin Broughton bid is still very quiet because it's Josh Harris and David Blitzer who are the major money behind it. And I can imagine this is going to be quite an awkward weekend for them with Chelsea playing Crystal Palace at Wembley. I'd be fascinated to know whether they'll be actually at the game or not. I suspect they probably won't be. But we're down to three. And time will tell whether it actually makes things quicker in terms of Rain and Chelsea narrowing down who their preferred bidder is. But there's certainly a little bit less for them to analyse now that the Ricketts Griffin bid is out of the picture.
Yeah.
So there are, of course, influencers claiming that it's them and they're pointing to the racism and anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim behaviour of the allegedly of the Ricketts consortium. And they're saying that it's them that's achieved this by pointing it out. And of course, the reality is bound to be, as you say, a business. it's a business thing. The share, the dilution of the shares and the apportioning of the shares is something to me that is makes much more sense than a small number of fans on Twitter pointing out a variety of things, despite the fact that obviously there would have been huge demonstrations had the Ricketts got in. But I think that they're going to ignore that. If it had all worked for them, it would have been something that they really would have embraced hugely. So,
well, there are a couple of things to say about that. I think one, there's been the argument coming out today, essentially, that, if it was about the Ricketts Senior's emails and the reaction to all of that stuff and the noise around, Pete Ricketts, governor of Nebraska, if all of this stuff was actually the determining factor, then they would have pulled out much earlier. And that has, that has some credibility to me. The other fact of this is that no one has forced them to pull out. There hasn't been any pressure from Rain, from Chelsea. Obviously, the noise from the outside is not nothing. And the way that they've reacted to it has proven that it's not nothing, because they've definitely done things they wouldn't have done if fans hadn't have been highlighting these comments and these views, and certainly if the Supporters Trust hadn't been pushing so forcefully for more reassurance that they would have run an inclusive as well as a successful club. They were doing a lot of work on the PR side to try to make up ground. So that tells you that they did think it was an issue, but I don't see anything from that to suggest that it would have been the reason why they pulled out. I think everything about their approach up to this point suggested they considered it something they would have to deal with and navigate, but it wasn't going to put them off. So I think the reason why they've pulled out now is purely business related, and we might not ever know exactly what those business reasons were, but it does seem that fundamental to this was kind of the arrangement of the investment and who would kind of be the majority shareholder and how things would have been divvied up.
Yeah, so Liam, obviously the deadline has now passed for the final bids. What's sort of the next steps going forward? When sort of hear the referred bid out, what does that look like to you? I know there's stuff with Bowley about 50% being owned by an investment company. You've obviously got the bid with the two Crystal Palace investors. You've also got the third bid as well, which has been very quiet. What's the noise around that final decision from Rain and ultimately the club?
So in terms of the time frame, I'd love to tell you, but we don't know. We don't know how long Rain and Chelsea will take. They haven't given themselves a deadline to pick a preferred bidder. I think when this whole process started, they wanted by the final week of April to be able to take the preferred bidder to the UK government and get everything signed off and get a new special license drawn up for the sale of the club. We are still time-wise on track for that. So perhaps that could be the case, that by the time we get to the final week of April, things will have moved significantly on and we will have one name, one bid team that has emerged. But as for, Team Bowley and the Clear Lake Capital situation, people around that bid are very much insisting that while Clear Lake, would probably have the largest shareholding, everyone involved considers it Bowley's bid, that he would be the controlling shareholder. He would be the one running the show, as it were, and that it would be probably Jonathan Goldstein as the UK-based executive who would be the sort of day-to-day face of the ownership, but Bowley would be the one at the wheel. Sorry, JK, did you want to say something?
I just wondered once, do you know, Liam, how Fenway is set up? Is that a shareholding, a company initially, in the same way? Set up the same way?
I don't know intimately the structure of it. I do know broadly that it's a syndicate of investors, big and small. And I don't think John W. Henry is the largest shareholder necessarily, or certainly not the richest person involved in that investment group. He is the one that everyone is comfortable with being the public face of it. And so that's always been the case ever since they got to Liverpool. So that could well be a similar situation with Bowley. To be honest, I think with most of the consortiums, the Paoluca bid, I think, you know, him and Larry Tannenbaum seem to be the two big names, but they've got a lot of other investors involved. And Martin Broughton's bid is certainly, we don't know all of the names of everyone involved beyond Harrison Blitzer, but I think that would be a pretty extensive list as well. So whoever comes in, whoever ends up taking over Chelsea, will probably be like a syndicate of investors with one or perhaps a couple of investment capital firms involved as well. The Bowley one is slightly different in that the investment firm would have the larger shareholding, as we understand. But, I think it is going to be more of an American model, which is very much geared towards sort of collegiate investing.
Yeah, Liam, I know you are pressed for time. I'm sure Chidge will be leaning on you in the coming weeks as we get more details on who will be Chelsea's new owners. Before you go, what pieces have you got coming out on The Athletic that listeners should look out for?
So at the moment, we've got on our site, I just did a piece that went up today about Jorginho and Kante. So obviously this season, from a good contract one. Point of view, has kind of been overshadowed by the fact that the entire Champions League winning defence has been in the final year of their deals. Now Azpilicueta has triggered the option in his contract, so his situation's a little bit more complex. But Rudiger and Christensen are still very much staring at free agency. And next year we will have the same with the starting midfield from Porto, with Jorginho and Kante. And so I was focusing mainly on them and the kind of dilemma that Chelsea face about what to do with them, because they're both north of 30 now. They were only last year voted in the Ballon d'Or rankings, essentially the two best central midfielders in the world. Luka Modric might have something to say about that based on that Real Madrid tie, but you know they're still clearly very, very good. And it puts Chelsea in an awkward contractual situation. Would they sell this summer, one or both? Would they extend them? Would they just let them run down their deals and try to get one more quality year out of them? Can they afford to do that, given that they want to try to invest money in the midfield and elsewhere? And hovering above all of this is that we don't even know who'll be making the decisions on it, because will Marina Granovskaya be in place? And what will the football structure of Chelsea look like under new ownership? So it's kind of trying to take a broad view of those situations. And then next week, I think, you know, we'll be reacting to the FA Cup semi-final, but it will continue to be takeover central, I think.
Yeah, your Athletic subscription worthy of just Liam's articles alone, but lots of fantastic stuff on there, especially on the Chelsea ownership. One places you can trust what you read, I'm sure. Liam, thank you for giving up some of your evening tonight for joining us.
No, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me back. And good job, Dean, in Chidge's absence. And I'm sure I'll have a good night, guys, and enjoy the game on Sunday as well.
Yeah, big shoes indeed. We're going to go for a short break. We'll be back to look back at Real Madrid midweek after this short break.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to Chidge and the Boys on the Chelsea Football Fancast. Total nutters and proper Chelsea.
Footballfancast.com.
Welcome back to the Chelsea Fancast. I'm still joined, hopefully, by JK.
I'm only just here, yes, but I've managed to hang on by the edge, by my whiskers, yes. Hello.
And my partner in crime, Dame Whittle.
Evening, everyone.
Now, we're going to look back at Tuesday night's masterclass in Madrid, JK. It was a glorious disappointment.
It was glorious. The word glory is beautifully used. Danny Blanchfly used to say that, the great Spurs midfielder and completely useless Chelsea manager, lasted about 6 months. We are talking 1980, but probably the shit. And I was the lion. I was down to the lion then. And I was shit. I didn't last very long. It was completely phenomenal. And what I loved was that I certainly predicted that we would play as well as that. It was the dreadful glory. It's like the reaching the heights, but then not quite getting over the finishing line. Which added to the glory, really, the fact that we played so wonderfully and the fact that Werner appears to have had a complete renaissance. I mean, the goal he scored was great, as was his overall contribution. And if he can carry on playing like that, I mean, well, I came away looking at all the positives from that, which is that if you play according to the way Tuchel wants you to play, we're a great team. And we unfortunately would have beaten them easily, but for the idiocy of the first leg. The first 35 minutes, it was so dreadful. And then the unfortunate error by Mandy, which just, you know, put the mockers on the whole tie. But we didn't deserve really to lose that by two goals, just because we're a far superior team to Madrid. But they came up with their two oldies. I mean, the problem with Benzema playing is that it just makes you realise how completely appalling Lukaku is, because Benzema is a proper striker, proper centre forward, whereas he is a leaping salmon of a player, and we have a bag of cement. And I'm looking forward to his not being with the club anymore, and I despair of the curse of the striker, and I would like to find out ultimately who wanted to buy Lukaku, whether in fact it was a Roman Shevchenko moment. But the game itself, we swarmed wonderfully, we pressed wonderfully. The energy required to play that way is, which was completely missing in the first 35 minutes at the Bridge, which was very evident at Southampton. We were brilliant at Southampton. We were brilliant at the Bernabeu, other than those two moments that they scored. And of course, I slightly despair that we didn't, when we were 4-3 up, whether we should actually have just resorted to the kind of shithousery that Atletico attempted to do yesterday and that Madrid did in the last 15 minutes at the Bridge, because we didn't. We sort of went for it. And we could shithouse, but I almost think we're too honest a team. He's too honest a manager. I don't think it's naivety. I just think it's a great positive for the side. He really doesn't have, or we have the odd moment of Rudiger might go down with cramp when we might punch someone surreptitiously, or we might take a slow throw in. But we don't have that degree of just falling over for no apparent reason. It's not in the team's nature. And I think I love that. And I just wish we'd scored. I wish the Alonso goal had been allowed. Now, you know, people are coming in with theories of referee collusion, and Tuchel wasn't happy with the referee laughing with Ancelotti at the end. But the goal was, the reasons why I was so disappointed was it clearly just touched his little finger. And also it was great. And Alonso had a fabulous game. And the fact that he can score a goal like that, there's a kind of schoolboy thing with it with me, because he can score great goals, Alonso, and I absolutely love him for it. All right, he's not the fastest player in the world, but in that setup, he seemed to perform out of his skin, as did they all. I can't fault anybody for that performance. It was two moments of absolute excellence that won it for them. Modric's brilliant pass, and all right, we were possibly a bit slow, and then Kante made a mistake and he left the, let the ball he let he thought that Reese was going for the ball and it let the that what's his face in um, Vinicius Junior. Vinicius Junior is an excellent player. And of course, Reece was played out of his skin against him. And there were noises being made by the Madrid hierarchy about who was the right back. He was great. Reece was completely phenomenal. What a player he is. What we need to do is look at the positives from all of this and think if we can get a few players in that fit Tuchel's pattern, TT's pattern for next year, if we're in a position to be buying players, I don't know, with the new owners, that fit the pattern, whether Connor steps up or he's the player you want. There is no reason why we shouldn't be competing for the title, be competing for the Champions League, and be competing for the quadruple, because that team played so wonderfully. And it was as I go back to it, it was glorious for that reason. It was a glorious defeat. But at the same time, it just showed you how far we've come as a side and what a completely brilliant manager he is. And it was, I wish I'd gone. I got some work and I couldn't go. But, you know, huge kudos and jealousy for those who went. What an occasion. One of the, possibly the greatest European outing ever, I think. Because the others were at home. I think as an away victory, it was absolutely phenomenal. And I wish I'd been there, but no, you know, sorry, I've rabbited on a bit, but my goodness me, what a completely wonderful performance it was. And yet, we lost because of the first leg.
Yeah, absolutely. Dane, the question that Chidra's asked in the script here is, where does this rank in terms of our great European performances? Is it dampened by the fact that ultimately, although we won the game, we lost the tie?
Well, as JK was saying, is it our greatest away performance in Europe? It's left a bitter taste, a bittersweet taste. You know, I watched the following night's games and it actually made me feel worse because of how wonderfully we played and we did everything we needed to do. Two small little moments, where Kante, again, you know, I'm not going to be critical of any of the players in previous years of watching Kante. I know sometimes if he passes over 10 yards, he can give it away. And in that instance, he tried a little dink, didn't he? I think it was to Reece. And it was, again, it was nothing. And they just took full advantage of that. And a Rudiger slip, with Kante, a lot of sort of like caught in no man's land, again, between him and Reece, and didn't know who to go for the ball. But it's just two little small instances which they completely punished individually. And it was heartbreaking because we done everything so right. I thought, again, I'm not going to dig out any players. A couple of players were a little bit, took a while to get going. They looked like rabbit in headlights, but then they went from like 5-6 levels to like 9.5s and was absolutely outstanding. And it was almost an all-round complete performance, wasn't it? And if you think, you know, every time I tried to accept defeat, I remember another chance, you know, a couple of Kai chances, and we absolutely dominated them. It's heartbreaking to think that first leg. I know two different tactics, two different styles, you know. The brilliant Joe Tweeds made a great comment on Twitter about, you know, that second leg should be a blueprint of our future and how we play. You can't play that way with certain players because you'll be carrying them. They need, obviously, a fitness. They need certain mobility and pace. But I suppose the slowest player in that team, Alonso, coped with it really well. Whether he could do that week in, week out, I don't know. But, yeah, as Joe Tweed said, that is a blueprint. You know, get the sort of that style of player in to play that blueprint. And we're a force to be reckoned with. And to be fair, that's the way we sort of got to the Champions League final last year, didn't we? And got to the final and dealt with City by playing those tactics. But going back to what you said, yeah, it was one of our greatest performances, not including obviously finals, European finals, but that was probably take away Napoli at home. Some really good defensive displays about Barcelona, but an all-round display of going at a team and going for the kill like we did. Yeah, it was an unbelievable performance.
Yeah, JK, I've been sort of battling with myself on this because it was a great performance, but we've lost, and it's not really in Chelsea's nature to celebrate us getting knocked out of the Champions League. I think the difference right now is that historically under Abramovich, failure in the Champions League has ended managers' reigns. You know, Mourinho the first time around.
True.
Ancelotti, AVB, Roberto Di Matteo, all these managers failed in Europe and got sacked. But this feels different with Tuchel. It feels like the start, even though we've already won the Champions League under him, it feels like we're just getting started on this path to supremacy.
Yeah, I think that's his way out. Otherwise, I think he'd be told by one of the directors when he's on the stairs at the end of the season that he's not got a job anymore, like Ancelotti was. But yeah, it's a good point, actually. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, Tuchel out.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. I think that's the path.
You're absolutely right, of course. Yes, any other previous manager would have been shown the door. Well, possibly not, just because you say he got his get out of jail card by winning it the first time and also winning Champions of the World and the Super Cup. And he'll probably win the FA Cup. Well, one hopes. We can't lose three in a row, bloody hell. I suppose in a sense I'm being a little bit too tired and emotional about it. And there obviously have been better performances in Europe, like even Chelsea beating Real Madrid in the Cup Winners' Cup replay, which was a completely superb, superb showing by the team. But I'm thinking very much in the present. I just think they're such a great side, and they played, as you said, Dane. They played as well as they played in the whole of the Champions League last year, which I have to say I predicted they would. I just hope that they, and once again, you know, it's such small margins. You know, as I said, if the Alonso goal had been allowed, and then Werner had scored after that, we wouldn't have had a problem. So you have to be, and then they spent the last 15 minutes diving around, of course, as they would after they got the goal. It's there are tactics to employ, or you have to somehow get round them. I'm actually going to be intrigued by if they're attempting to implement this timekeeping thing now. They're doing trials of it, UEFA or FIFA, in under 23 football, of having an external timekeeper, because you wonder then whether any of these just falling over for no apparent reason. And, you know, example was last night in the Atletico game where Foden got kicked and then the Atletico player came and picked him up and threw him off the pitch. And I understood his frustration, but his own player just kicked him and he was then yellow carded and sent off. And what I loved was that the Atletico player's complete disbelief as to why he'd been carded again, despite having in all videos thwacked Foden really hard with a late tackle, you know, because kicked him. But if you can iron that kind of thing out, the kind of fair play tactics that we seem to employ would be rewarded. In answer to your question, I'm very much in the moment with this, just because I'm so fond of the manager. And yes, he in a previous setup, he probably would have been shown the door. But in this instance, he started by winning the Champions League. And he clearly is the best manager we have ever had. And his ability to get performances out of a team that was never his in the first place, it was Frank's or previous managers, is so praiseworthy. And the new owners coming in, I think, if they're the kind of owners that want money rather than the success that Roman looked for, then I think they'll be getting it, because if they just give him the few tweaks that he wants, I don't know who the players are going to be, but if he gets the few players that he wants, we will be such a force to be reckoned with. This is why I'm so positive about it. But yes, I suppose in reflection, you can't really say it's the best performance in Europe when they've lost, but it was a great performance, and that is why Tuchel will not be leaving us, because of his huge potential, because he is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Dane, JK mentioned there's a few tweaks, and if you look at the game, it turned on the substitutions. Madrid's obviously working in their favour. And for Chelsea, you know, Pulisic was, you know, anonymous. Jorginho missed the great chance at the end. Alsop didn't really
Pulisic missed those two difficult chances, though, didn't he, Dean? Mm. That was the thing.
Yeah.
Didn't he?
Do you think that's the fine margins?
Swivels ahead of
Well, I suppose that's the difference, isn't it? You know, we talk about Benzema's chances in that first leg, you know, half chances, but he's a world-class striker who puts him away. You know, Pulisic is not a world-class striker. His finishing's okay. I thought he was a good sub at the time. I thought Werner had picked up a knock and he looked like he was carrying a bit of a... he was limping a bit, and I thought, you know, Pulisic's pace could threaten them. Substitutions don't always work. Obviously, Vez did. Camavinga come in the centre midfield and done really well for him. And obviously, Rodrigo got the goal. It's harsh. Our subs didn't work out, you know, whether it's Ziyech, Pulisic, Jorginho. Saul, I think, came on obviously late. But we're chasing the game at that time. And we're sort of having to change our system a bit because we had, you know, 10 outfield players who with high fitness levels, you know, with pressing and pressure and good mobility. And to an extent, you know, bringing on Ziyech and Jorginho are two different sort of players that wouldn't really suit that system. It was a great selection by Tuchel originally. You know, I saw a lot of people complaining about Werner starting. One thing Tuchel does, he gives you a chance, you know, and if you don't take that chance, that's freaking tough. The reason Werner started was he was absolutely fantastic against Southampton. You know, we all saw that with our own eyes. Pulisic, Ziyech, Werner, Lukaku have not been consistent for Tuchel. Otherwise, they would be playing regularly. They've all had their chances. They've all had their games where they've, you know, a 7 here or an 8 here, and then they sort of die out or get injury. But none of them's been consistent. So I don't know how you can still moan on Twitter about certain players not starting. Werner was absolutely outstanding against Southampton, and he was absolutely outstanding against Real Madrid. And I've no doubt he should now start again on Sunday and carry on that, you know, that good form. JK made a great point about these not being two core players. A lot of these players were bought for Frank and Frank's style, and Werner has suffered. You know, if Tuchel really wanted to play a system that suited Werner, he would do. But he hasn't done until the last two games. Really suits Werner. Werner, you know, you hear so many times that he isn't great and he isn't good, and a lot of critical of him, but certain players only fit like some sort of a couple of tactics, a couple of formations, a couple of systems. And Werner is one of them. Call it limited. I've talked about Ziyech being similar before, or you either call it limited or you don't. You know, he's not someone who can play out on the left. In recent weeks, he's played out on that when Tuchel's doing that 4-1-4-1. He's played out in the left midfield. He's not a left midfielder. He's not even a left winger, which some people claim in a 4-3-3. He's someone who likes to play through the middle, who likes to drift out to the left. And that's a big difference, drifting out to the left and actually being stuck out on the left. Released last two games have suited him down to the ground. And if that's the way Tuchel's going to go, it's going to be a massive benefit for Werner. If it's not, he's going to go back to the previous formation of like wing backs and the right forward and the left forward behind the striker, then Werner might be going in the summer. Go on, JK.
So he suits better in the four than Werner, in fact. That's what we're saying. The Southampton goal that he scored, the goal that he scored when it was the header backwards from what's his name, the double barrel guy's name, the bad header. But he just ran onto it. That's right. He headed it back.
Yeah, it was.
Headed it backwards. And he ran at the player. It was a Leipzig goal, completely and utterly. He rounded the goalkeeper and got it in from an acute angle. Now, what setup we were playing. He just seemed to be much more relaxed on the ball in the Madrid game, and as I say, the goal was great when he took it wide, and it makes you realise that it is clearly a confidence player completely. Because he's been in that kind of position before, where he's been one on one with the goalkeeper or chasing, and he's kicked the ball wide or he's hit the side netting or whatever. And we saw the Leipzig player, and I really, as you say, he must pick him on Sunday, and he must. He should play in exactly the same way, because he appears now to have got his mojo back. And I'm very pleased. I've been very critical of him because he's just looked as if he couldn't trap a paper bag, but suddenly you see that and you realise you've got a match winner, you know.
Yeah, well, we did win the Champions League with Werner, Havertz and Mount as a front three, so it shouldn't be too much of a shock that they play well together. JK, one player that perhaps surprised some people starting was Ruben Loftus-Cheek on the right-hand side again.
Yes.
Tuchel said before about finding him in unorthodox positions. And that's something that they did do. They found him in these weird areas of the pitch where Madrid couldn't really cope with him. What did you make of his performance again?
I thought he was fine. You know, what I love about Tuchel is he persists with players who you've made a decision about. You think, no, they're not very good. No, he's having a bad season. And they suddenly play well. What you hope is that they will then use that as an opportunity to kick on from there. Because, I mean, Saul played well in a couple of games in the season. I thought we'd see him more often and didn't pick him. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's a sort of contradiction, isn't it? We always think somebody played well and it means that he'll pick him. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if that doesn't feature on Sunday, because it might be a tactical thing. You know, it might be that he works out something else. He works out that Ziyech works better with Havertz and Mount up front against Palace, because he's that kind of tactician. But yeah, I found him. I thought he was very poor in the home leg, and just because I think he was playing centrally, and he didn't. You'd have thought that would be his best position. He'd been when he'd played previously. I remember he played against Luton, and he was terrible until he pushed further up, and then he dominated. He was very much, as I say, nobody played badly. Possibly. Tricky start at the front just because of the nerves, because it's a semi-final, as a quarter-final. But a great improvement, and seemed to be not didn't give the ball away as much, didn't seem to be caught in possession as much, and played well in that particular cog in the machine. And perhaps that's how he's being seen this season, because he appears to play everywhere. Against Burnley, he played... right wing back, didn't he? So I mean, which is a shame, isn't it, really? Because everybody says his best position is just behind the front, in a kind of Frank ex-Frank position moving forwards. He appears to have been kind of odd job man. Speaking of Burnley, what do we think of Sean Dyche going? Is it Dyche or Dyche? You think
of him?
Anything to help Burnley get relegated is a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Yeah,
I think I'm going to contradict myself by I think JK was right, because it was very tricky first 10-15 minutes, and I contradict myself because I thought Ruben was one of the players that looked like a rabbit in headlights, started off quite slowly, but I'd sold him in my head in the summer. I thought early on this season he'd made some really encouraging performances off the bench, and he's been given more of his chance, just like a lot of players, hasn't performed. But that performance, once he got going against Madrid in the second leg, again, was outstanding, which has made me think, well, if he can produce that sort of performance still, then there is a hope for him from staying in the future, and Tuchel will find a place within a rotation. No, he didn't pick Jorginho. He was obviously never going to pick Barkley. He didn't pick Ziyech. He booked Ruben to do a job, and Ruben done a job. So that is positive for him for the future and staying with us.
Saying they have to keep these standards up.
Yes,
they
absolutely.
They have to maintain these standards, because this is an elite team. We are a top, top team, and you cannot afford to have people just not, to use an Americanism, stepping up to the plate. And speaking of that, that's what worries me about Pulisic, who we keep giving him these chances, because 2 years ago, before his hamstrings went, he was fabulous. And yet we are not seeing it. We all have our hopes for him, because you want him to succeed, but he had those two chances when he came on. And if he'd got one of them, we'd have won it. You know, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Well, we would.
Oh, Tuchel does give you a chance, JK. You know, I can think... I can probably count on one hand since Tuchel's been manager where I think he's been harsh. I've stated it so many times. When Pulisic was on a great run of form, he rested him at home to Fulham last season, and Havertz came in and scored maybe one or two, and then Pulisic was sub again, which I thought was harsh, because he should have kept the the kettle boiling with him. But Tuchel, you know, Tuchel, or if you're on form and you're playing well, Tuchel will then play you again. It's only when you fall out of form that he drops you. He's very fair, and you do get a chance under Tuchel, as we proved with every player in this side. At some point, they've had a run of games, and if they're not performing, then fucking tough.
Yeah, obviously this weekend a big chance for Chelsea to, you know, renounce the defeat in the Champions League by getting through to another FA Cup final when we play Crystal Palace on Sunday. We'll be previewing that after the break. Before we do that, though, Chidge spoke to me. He said, I'm not feeling very well, but something will help me out, make me feel better, as if the listeners that don't already own a Chelsea Pitch Owners share, if they buy one. As you know, Chelsea Pitch Owners make sure that Chelsea remains playing football at Stamford Bridge and playing under the name of Chelsea Football Club. And in the current climate with new owners, their involvement in this whole situation has never been more important. You can buy a share between £110 for an electronic share and up to £173 for a framed share signed by a Chelsea player. Just go to the website and look for Chelsea Pitch Owners. And the other thing that will help Chidge out feel a lot better is if you join the Chelsea Supporters Trust. As we know, the Trust has played a fantastic role in what's been going on with speaking with potential new owners, ensuring that, you know, fans are listened to, that everybody has a voice. And you can have your voice in the Trust by becoming a member for just £5. You have your say in important issues such as the European Super League, ticket prices, kickoff times, and many other issues important to supporters. They make sure your voice is heard by the club, and as a member, you get to attend meetings, vote in the elections, put forward motions at the AGM, and you get a lovely Chelsea Supporters Trust badge. Visit chelseasupporterstrust.com to sign up today. And while you're at the game, make sure you pick up your copy of CFC UK from the stall. It will be at Wembley with DJ and the other sellers. You can also subscribe to it by emailing fanzine@cfc.net. That costs £16 if you're in the UK, £35 if you're in Europe, and £45 for the rest of the world. Digital costs you £6 for a subscription or £1 for a copy. You can also pay via PayPal. All the details you can get through fanzine@cfcuk.net. We're going to go for a short break. When we're back, we'll be looking ahead to another Chelsea trip to Wembley.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Chidge.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
Fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Footballfancast.com.
Welcome back to the final part of the Chelsea Fancast preview show. I'm thankfully still joined by JK.
Oop.
And the delightful Dave Whittle, who's not left me yet.
Well, I'm loyal and very biased.
JK, another trip to Wembley for Chelsea. Does the fact that this game becomes so soon after Madrid worry you at all?
Nah. Keep the momentum going. What have we got? We've got ridiculous number of matches in small number of days, haven't we? He's just got to keep it going. And that may mean, in fact, he may pick a side that has no bearing on what we saw during the week, just because of the number of matches we've got coming. But I think he'll pick and choose. We've got Arsenal next Wednesday, haven't we? Gunners. I'm optimistic, as always. I'm optimistic about this team. I mean, they've got some decent players, Palace. Butland's a decent keeper. And they've got, of course, our ex-player Gueye, who's having a fantastic season, and people are complaining as to why on earth we let him go. But it was the end of his contract, and he didn't think he was going to get in. Little did he realise everybody was coming to the end of their contracts and people wanted to leave. And he would have been a shoo-in because he's top player. And the positive of this, of course, is that we're producing great players from the academy, which is as it should be. And of course, the best playing for them, who won't be playing for them on Sunday, is Conor Gallagher, who is, let's hope that he becomes the great player. Looks as if he will, from having watched him at Palace. Not that I watch Palace all the time, but from the highlights, because you can see them, you see him bapping them in and non-stop running, and looks as if he's going to be another Frank for us. Other players I would spot for them is Olise, who's a good, I don't know if you pronounce it that, Olise, Michael Olise, and Ederici Easy. Where did he used to play? I think he played, did he play at Rangers, Queen's Park Rangers? Very decent players. Olise's a very good player, almost scored several times at Selhurst Park, just past the post. And they've got that that perennial trier, Hughes, who used to play for Derby under Frank, who I've always liked him because he always gets stuff done. You know, some players, you watch teams and you think, oh, he's a decent player. At least I do. And he's a decent player for them as well. And of course, you then get into their forwards, and Zaha is excellent, really excellent player. And is someone to watch, just because he's top winger, top player, has to be snuffed at. And Benteke is always there, good for a run and a header. And he's a very good competitive player. And Ayew is also much better than people think he is. I remember the previous time we had a guest on, he wasn't a fan of Schluck. He said if Schluck played, they weren't going to win. So let's hope Schluck turns out for them. just thinking about who else there is. Kujat is a decent player. Milivojevic has also always been very competitive. I mean, they've got some decent players, and Vieira has clearly made them into a very competitive side. So it's not going to be a walkover, but I think we're too strong for them. And I'm no doubt Vieira will have a, unless I'm calling him Vieira because I'm a bit of a ponce. But in the same way I call Mendy Mondi. You see, it's a little bit of learning gets in the way. You see, I shouldn't have done French at school. That's the trouble. And I go, no, it's not actually pronounced like that. It's Vieira. It's life will go. La Vieira will go. Anyway, I think the word wanker is probably applied well in this instance. I've got a soft spot for Palace. I'll admit it. I've got a soft spot. I used to live in Tooting and used to watch Wimbledon play there when they shared, because I used to do some work for LBC and they had a little box, and I occasionally got invited. And I like Selhurst Park. It's an old shithole, but it's traditional. And I think, as I say, I think Vieira has done really well with them. And I wish him well, but not on Sunday.
Yeah, Dane, as JK said, Vieira, perhaps a little bit unexpectedly, has got Palace playing some good football. They've had some you know, decent results recently. The 3-0 against Arsenal, the 4-0 against Everton. They're a strong, physical, but quick team. How do you think that extra time, you know, the energy that we put into that game against Madrid is going to affect us? Do you think Tuchel's going to have to rotate the team quite a lot to cope with Palace? And obviously, this is such a huge game for them, where we've been to so many semi-finals in recent years. But for them, this is, you know, a cup final for them, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, going back to what you originally said, yeah, Patrick Vieira has done an amazing job, and he's shown so many capabilities of going on to being a top manager. You know, it's not always the case of such talented players like he was going to, you know, management and naturally do it. He played under some great managers, club level and international level, and I know he was cutting his teeth in the MLS with, you know, in New York City. So for him to then, I've had his chance in France, and now to come over to Palace and get them playing a really good style and really good way. And, you know, it looks like he's got an eye for a player as well. And you're right, JK's right. You know, there's something about Palace, you know, ignore their stupid fans, but their stadium is very traditional, and it brings back memories for me, you know, from going so many times away with Chelsea over the years since the late 80s. And things like that just hold special, you know, with you as an individual. And but then answering your other question, it's a conundrum, isn't it? You know, 120 minutes will hit certain players, or hit the players maybe in their 30s, or you're hoping that you're keeping the kettle boiling. Maybe a Christensen for Thiago Silva, you know, whether Kante can do the 3 games in a week or not. But I wouldn't change.
4 days rest. They've got 4 days rest.
Yeah, though, yeah. Kante did start against Southampton, didn't he? So I was just worrying about the potential three games within a week. I wouldn't change too much. But as JK already said, you know, it's a big game against Arsenal on Wednesday. It'd be nice for us to put them out of sight. You know, that's one of their game in hands that they're hoping to catch up on possibly Spurs. But it'd be nice to, you know, put them out of sight and beat them. So it depends whether that Tuchel's got the eye on Arsenal or just via, you know, let's get this Palace out of the way first before we worry about resting certain players. It will, yeah, again, it's 120 minutes, you know. But as we said earlier in the show, you know, it's fair to be disappointed if you didn't play well. But we proved, again, with my blue tinted glasses on, I thought we proved we were the better team. We had a crazy 35 minutes in the first leg, but I thought we was far superior in that second leg. Didn't help going in with a 2-goal deficit. And I thought we was outstanding. So, you know, Tuchel, who's an outstanding manager, like we all know, much loved, will just be playing on the fact of how wonderful they played against Real Madrid. And hopefully we'll take that into the Palace game and give them confidence.
The one problem, of course, is Anthony Taylor is reffing.
Well, yeah, I didn't want to mention that because I thought we was fairly positive through the whole show. And yes, the 12th man for Palace being Anthony Taylor. Yeah, that's something. Gold.
Yeah, that was going to be a question for later, but we'll ask it now, JK, as, you know, the resident referee. Is Anthony Taylor a concern?
Yeah, do it without swearing, JK.
Can I call him a dick?
Yes,
we'll allow that.
Absolutely.
Of course, it's a problem because he's a loose cannon. He applies the laws in ways that I just don't understand, and he's a complete law unto himself. He doesn't. He seems to look down on players. There's a superciliousness about him that I find appalling. As seems to befit somebody who worked in prisons. I'm being so unfair on him, actually. He probably was a very sympathetic man. But he definitely has a slight superiority, and slight's the wrong word. He is a walking ego on a stick. And as I say, his application of the laws is so bizarre. I will never forget the example when Alonso, when Marcos, our dear Marcos, was felled against Tottenham by the goalkeeper and he initially gave a foul for the goalkeeper and was then annoyed that VAR had asked him to review it. You could see him, he was steam coming out of his ears that he had to go back and reassess it. Oh God, I've made the decision. I'm the referee. I make decisions. I'm right. Oh, the goalkeeper appears to have demolished Marcos. Oh, I suppose I better give a penalty. So that one. And the other one, of course, is I mean, I could go on and on. We've got a whole list of bloody things. The dreadful decision he made over, was it Sanchez in the Arsenal final, when Sanchez handled the ball and was offside and he gave the goal. And that was the first goal against us. And of course, the subsequent sending off of Kovacic when he was the one who was fouled. I mean, you just cannot believe his inability to wish to look at VAR. And these, I mean, he did it the other day, watching it in one of the games, somebody in Man City, ball hit the Man City player on the stones on the leg, went for a corner. So obviously, we all saw it on television, big deflection, refused. Well, it's his decision on the pitch, isn't it? That's not something that VAR does, and it should. That's one of the ludicrousnesses of VAR. Decision on the pitch, but he got it completely wrong. Linesman didn't say anything. Fourth official doesn't say anything. So he is allowed to get away with it because everybody defers to him because he is supposedly the great Anthony Taylor. This is why he is wheeled out for these games, because somewhere they seem to believe in the... what's the abbreviation for refs? Pogamore, whatever it's called, I don't know. They seem to believe that he is one of the best referees in the country. I would like to see Michael Oliver refereeing one of these games, who to me is one of the better, possibly the best. Why, even he, I think, has slightly lost the plot on occasions, but why do they keep going to Oliver? What is, and particularly with his record against us, you can see the percentages. He's made more decisions against us than against other teams, contentious decisions. And he may, you know, if it's, it could be the whole game is ruined by a ridiculous decision he makes early, or he decides that somebody's committed a foul when they haven't, or he books somebody who is then booked a bit later on, and we're playing with 10 men. He is a law unto himself, and it really is. You've started me off here now, Dean. It really is about, I mean, started me off by just asking me a question about Taylor, it's really is about time that they just completely... You know, it's like a stables need to be flushed out. They need to get rid of all the shit because it really is so rubbish and rotten. The whole setup. You've got these are blokes wandering about making these decisions, and they're not up with the game. They're not fit enough. Oh, I just completely despair. But he is just it's such an annoying appointment, isn't it? That's it. Jonathan is now shutting up.
Well, we keep our fingers crossed that the game is decided by the players and not the referee. Dane, this is yes. Chelsea's 26th FA Cup final. They've won 15 and lost 10. Will that experience count for Chelsea against an inexperienced Palace side?
That's a surprise, actually, the 10 losses. Did you say it's 15 wins and 10 losses?
That is, according to Chidge's notes...
That's a surprise. We've lost so many, actually. I thought we'd be a little bit more.
Lose a lot in the 60s, Dane. We seem to lose a lot in the 60s. Lost a lot in the 60s. I went to several and came away in tears as a child, I remember. Anyway, sorry to digress. Sorry. Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah, I just think, you have those experiences. You have even experience from the other night in the Bernabeu. You know, these take you on. That goal that Mount scored in the Bernabeu, that goal that Werner scored, you know, you build on that. You know, it shows you can perform in big games, which we obviously know we can because we won the Champions League. We're the current Champions League holders. So, yeah, it's immense, but... You know, on that day, sometimes it doesn't mean anything, as it's proved in recent finals. You know, when, you know, we've talked about, you know, losing to Arsenal in recent FA Cup finals. And each of those games, I thought we was sure to win. I fancied us to beat Liverpool. I still think we were a better team in the Carling Cup, like we were in the Super Cup against them. And we've lost both times on penalties. It's It's on the day, isn't it? Unfortunately, Palace do have a young team, an energetic team, and I just hope he goes with an energetic team as well, and we can match him and exploit those big spaces on the Wembley pitch. But yeah, obviously, if you've got the winners, the World Cup winners, the Champions League winners, the Premier League winners in your side, then that's obviously going to hopefully give you an advantage.
Yeah, I remember going to the semi-final against Tottenham when Tottenham thought they had won the game before we started and we beat them 4-2. But then the final against Arsenal, it felt like we had won before the game started and obviously Arsenal beat us. So I think you can feel those things when you're there at the game. JK, you mentioned Conor Gallagher already. How big of a miss is he going to be for Palace? Because he obviously, unfortunately, can't play in this game.
He took him off in the last game at half-time. Because he wasn't playing as well or didn't fit in the pattern, so or perhaps he was preparing to play without him. You never know where he's giving him a half without him. But he's one of their best players. He's fantastic. So they're bound to miss him. Yeah, bound to miss him. But that's a very good point, Dane. I think they might start. A little bit flippidicious just because it's semi-final and they haven't been to some of the players won't have been to that big in an event, whereas lots of the Chelsea players are completely used to that kind of thing. So it might be that we need to score in the first 10 minutes. We might have a lot of the ball in the first 10 minutes as a consequence before they get their act together. But Gallagher, great potential, played wonderfully for them, scored some great goals. They're bound to miss him. Yeah, completely.
Do you think he should be playing?
But it's the law is such that was the deal in the loan deal. It's written in, wasn't it? You don't play against the parent club. Why should we give in? I'm being far too competitive, I know, but that's what I'm. You asked me that question, but yeah, for him it would have been a wonderful day. But at the same time, if he then contributes to our losing, I don't want that. Thanks very much. That's part of the deal. The deal is he doesn't play against the parent club. So,
and if he scores a own goal or something like that, works both ways, doesn't it? I suppose.
He might be. Absolutely worth. That's very. Yeah.
Well, they knew that, didn't they, at the beginning of the deal? I know it's a lot different to a third round League Cup game where, Mason Mount and Fikayo Tomori was playing for Derby and it was more like an experience for him. I think you should experience all different. When you are a loan signing, you should experience everything you can experience. But as JK said, that's the law. They knew that beforehand. Harsh, yes, but just Casey, it can come back to bite us because he's a fantastic player and he would have been, I know it's hypothetical, but, just imagine his energy coming on in that second leg against Real Madrid when, late on in that game when we needed, that sort of energy for those tactics. But they knew that at the beginning of the season. That's what they signed up for. So, Chelsea, but Tuchel, it came out recently, did it sometime today, but Tuchel said he saw him in a restaurant in the last couple of weeks and he actually apologised to him for it, which shows the man Tuchel is. And hopefully, they've got a good relationship, which we will see. Tuchel has mentioned him a lot of times, and it's clear that he will be in the squad and he'll be fighting for a place for us next season. So, Tuchel is his manager, even though Patrick Vieira is his current loan manager, and he's not going to want to burn any bridges because his number one aim is to come back to Chelsea and be a success, which we hope and believe he will be.
Yeah, well, hopefully he's going to play lots of more semi-finals in Chelsea blue rather than the Palace blue and red. Now, Chidge hasn't done a team selection, so that means the power is in my hands. I think...
Well, have you got those little figures? Got the little figures? Dean, haven't got those little figures like he had?
I don't know if it's going to show up on the screen. No.
Oh, no, it's all... I could lie, but no, it's all white and blurry. But
not that it makes great audio anyway.
they look great. Yeah, they look great, Dean. They look great, yeah. Yeah.
But I think Tuchel will pick Mendy in goal, Azpilicueta, Chalobah and Rudiger as the back three, Reece James and Christian Pulisic as the wing-backs, Jorginho and Kovacic in midfield, and Mount, Werner and Havertz in attack. No Silva because of the 120 minutes against Madrid. Kante, I thought he looked completely exhausted when he came off. Alonso actually ran the most distance of any Chelsea player against Madrid, 15 kilometres.
Did he?
Which was...
Not surprised. He had a great game. Yeah. Really great.
Yeah, really brilliant. Yeah, against Southampton as well. That's two. A bit harsh before the Southampton game. I thought since he's deputised for Chilwell, I could probably count on one hand the amount of good games he's had. He's been averagely consistent. But these two, like Ruben, these two last two games, Southampton and Real Madrid, has just made me want to keep him and him and Chilwell. I'd still have Chilwell as ahead of him, but he
in a certain system, these two
systems has brought out the best in Alonso. Whether before I thought, you know, recent weeks or recent months, he struggled to an extent. He was amazing in the final against Liverpool, but pretty average on the other times. But wow, these last two games, absolutely brilliant. Good for him.
Yeah.
JK, what do you make of the team? What do you think Tuchel's going to do?
I would side with you completely. I think Chalabar and Dave with Rudiger just seems to be the exactly what he'll do. But in fact, I think the reality is he'll pick Silva and Conte, and despite them both being knackered. Just from an experience point of view, and it's been 4 days. I don't know, in this instance, he could go that way. I just think playing Pulisic as the wing back when there is Alonso there is something I don't think he'll do. Unless he's worked something out with Palace that he feels is essential, in which case he might play Saul down there, which would really confuse us. But, and as I said earlier, he might decide to play Lukaku. No, I don't think he will, because he's mentioned in the press conference that he thinks events have moved on with him. I can't remember how he phrased it. It was a bit damning that they'd worked out the way they wanted to play or something, which meant basically that Lukaku was a kind of, you know, bring him on if you need to score a goal later on.
I'm glad he came back though, JK. I'm glad he's come back. And, you know, listen, we can look to...
There's an option.
Well, no, we can talk all day about the transfer fee, but I'm glad he came back to Chelsea. If it doesn't work out and he goes in the summer, fine. But that will, you know, I always wondered about him, you know, selling him. There was a clear love. You see the old videos when he was a kid, and you always thought, you know, he wanted to come back. He's come back and it hasn't worked out. But, you know, if we can get a good amount of money for him and we both go our separate ways, fine. But I'm glad that he did come back rather than always wondering. But he limit again, you know, talking about tactics and systems and, you know, the way that Tuchel wants us to play, that you can clearly see in recent weeks with Southampton and Real Madrid. I don't think we've got enough players to play that way successfully. We haven't got enough. We need we've got a great squad, but not enough to play that system with that energy and that mobility and that movement. So by as Dean said, making quite a lot of changes, that will take something out of us. And I think you won't see the same sort of system that we've played in, you know, the last 2 years.
You wouldn't. If Lukaku plays, not the same system at all. No.
Even with Rudy, you know, it's harsh.
You can see them changing.
Yeah, I know it's harsh.
You see them changing. They start playing. I mean, look, Alonso plays a lot better with Havertz. He plays a lot better in playing the little dinky moves to the left, with depending on who the forward is with him. Whereas if he's supposed to be hitting Romelu up front, he doesn't do that. Romelu makes the runs and he doesn't play the ball in.
They're not
attuned to it. They're better attuned to Havertz, and Havertz works much better in the system. Havertz, to me, has just got better and better and better as this season's come. He's now becoming the player that we wanted him to be. He's a really terrific footballer.
Absolutely amazing.
But no, in response, I'm a bit all at sea with this, actually, Dean. I don't know. I'd like to agree with you, and I'd say, yeah, it seems pretty reasonable that he'd play those. But he keeps deceiving us by playing, you know, who we don't think he'll play. I would agree that perhaps a slightly weaker rotated side would work, and yet it's a semi-final. He wants to win the FA Cup, so he might give it precedence to the Arsenal game. And he might play that team you suggested against Arsenal, bringing on the players later. And I think he might start with Silva. may play Christensen. So it might be Christensen, Silva and Rudiger with Alonso, with Reece, with Kante and Kovacic and Havertz. And I would play Werner, because I agree. but he might just play Ziyech from the beginning, Ziyech, Mount and Havertz. So I've not helped at all there. I've not given you a proper team. I've given too many whats and ifs, but that's the kind of a, as I think you'll play a stronger side than the one that you've selected. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What you have done, though, JK, is you've named every member of the squad. So on Tuesday, you were right.
Of course. But I knew I'd done that.
That's usually what I'd do.
Here's a Dane move. Time to nail our colours to the mast, then. How do we think it's going to go? What's the score going to be? JK, I'll let you answer first.
3-1.
Blow them away or a tight game up to the end?
No, I'll be 3-0 and then they'll score.
Dane, what are your four score predictions?
Well, seeing as you didn't ask me for my team selection prediction, I'm, you know, it's
give it now. Give it now.
Well, yeah, I think JK, you were right. Dean's made too many changes, and I really like the way we've played in recent weeks. Unfortunately, I know, you know, we have massive fans of Jorginho, but he can't play in that system. I'm sorry. If that's the system I like, he can play in a lot of other systems that suit him, but he would not. I don't think he'll be suited in that system, and I don't think Dave would be either. So I'd only actually make two changes. Probably Christensen for Silva and maybe Ruben for Kante to keep up that momentum from Madrid. And maybe three changes. Maybe I'd have Ziyech in for move Ruben in the middle and have Ziyech on the right, because, you know, to drop deep and support Reece, because I don't think Pulisic, you know, that's not his game, dropping deep. I know we've seen him at right wing back, but we need to show his qualities up front. So we'll keep him on the bench. But if we play the way we've played, where we've scored, like, nine goals in two games, with that high intensity, the pressing, you know, the mobility, the movement, then, yeah, I think, like JK, you know, we'll blow them away 3-0. Well, he said they'd get a late goal, but I can see a 3-0 for me, unless we make as many changes that you say, and it stops, you know, how we've played the last two games, and I can see us scraping a 2-1.
Yeah, I was going to go more towards a tighter game, sort of 2-0, 2-1 to Chelsea. Of course, going through just in 90 minutes to make it all the more enjoyable and comfortable after the Tuesday night heartache in Madrid. That just about wraps us up. JK, enjoy the game on Sunday. You'll obviously be there in the middle circle of Wembley.
Yeah, somewhere like that. I don't know. Yeah, it'll be somewhere. It'll be somewhere where I'm sitting with nobody I know, and I'm amazed that the kind of person who will stand up and just spend the whole of the game looking at the opposition fans giving throat-cutting gestures. I don't quite understand how I've got a ticket near them, but that's what'll normally happen. Yeah.
Good to see you. Thank you for your assistance in the evening. I feel like you've helped me be more goose hitting than Rafa Benitez as an interim Chelsea fan cast host.
If you'd been Rafa, you wouldn't have had me here. You'd have got rid of me. Because I'd have been JT, and you'd have said I wasn't fit enough.
Alex,
what era of hitting?
I haven't needed to do anything different, actually. So thank you so much. So good. I think Chidd would have interrupted my spiel at the beginning and said, "Oh, come on, you know, he just interrupted it." And said, "You know, yeah, you've given away all everything with the questions I was going to ask." But no, thank you for allowing me to what can I say? Wank on about the game on during the week, but yes, it was very good. Good fun show. Well done. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, I'm sounding patronising. Patronising. I mean, well,
always good to see you. Obviously, usually talking Chelsea women, but tonight Chelsea men together.
Yeah. No, it has been fun. Obviously, we've missed Chidge, but it's obviously, you know, I'm used to your style, so I knew what to expect. And yeah, now I think, you know, you've done yourself proud. But obviously, at the same time, you know, we wish Chidge all the best. You know, obviously we love him and adore him, and hopefully he listens to this and feels that you've done him proud as well. And yeah, JK's just been naturally himself, which I didn't expect any different, because, you know, he's such a professional and he's well loved as well. And yeah, it's been nice. It's been a nice experience. And yeah, as Liam as well, you know, it's that insight he gives. And, you know, as JK and yourself, Dina, said earlier, is athletic articles that, you know, are really brilliant. And, you know, there's nothing in it for me, but, you know, I have it, you know, I have the thing, you know, I pay for it yearly. And, you know, yeah, it's brilliant. It covers so many different sports and so many different areas. And yeah. Yeah, Liam is one of my favourites that I do keep an eye on.
Yeah, well, Chidge has to edit and publish tonight's show, so he's got to listen, whether he wants to or not. Like Dane said,
we praise him some more then.
Yeah, we all wish him a speedy recovery. Everybody obviously misses him greatly on the show. The show will be back next Tuesday, because Monday is a bank holiday, for the main show with JK, Clayton Bierman and Alex Churchill at 7 p.m. looking back at the match against Crystal Palace and ahead to the Premier League match against Arsenal in midweek. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Until then, keep it blue, keep it carefree, and keep it Chelsea.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.